Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and the homie Will T. What's good, fellas?
Everything is copacetic on this end, man. Just had an amazing dinner. Actually, I had jollof rice to celebrate your birthday, Wole.
Hey, you had what? Wait a minute. Don't lie to people,
I made it myself.
Did you
celebration
really?
Of you.
Did you really, dog?
Absolutely.
All right,
100%. I don't have no reason to lie.
You know what? I'm touched. That's what's up.
Yeah, I made it in honor of your birthday, man.
Man, you know
I
what?
I was going to bring it to the studio, but you didn't do the show today from the studio, so
yeah.
I ate it.
You ate it? But was it bomb, though?
I didn't eat all of it. But,
did it taste authentic? That's the question. The people want to know, bro.
I wouldn't say 100% authentic, but it was close.
I'm going to ask you, I'm really intrigued by this. Like, what did you... Hey, tell me the ingredients real quick. I want to know what you put into this thing.
Romano tomato.
Okay. Come on, bro. This is good, man. This is good.
Yeah, Romano tomato, Scotch bonnet pepper.
Okay.
Onion, red onion.
Okay.
Of course. A little bit of ginger, used bay leaf, thyme, salt, white pepper. I said the ginger already. Cayenne pepper.
No oil. Oh. You failed.
Yeah, no, I did use.
What kind of oil did you use?
I'm not done yet.
What kind of oil? He hit a lot. The ginger. No, real talk. The ginger is like I get improv. I don't even put ginger on my stuff. But go ahead, dude. I like that one.
Then I also used avocado oil.
I'm gonna keep this a buck.
Avocado, it has a higher smoke point.
No, I get it, but I'm gonna keep this a buck.
Okay.
I tried to substitute and put olive oil. Ain't the same, bro. Go to use veggie oil or canola oil. That's it.
Avocado oil, it's a little,
bro,
it's a higher smoke point.
Bro, I'm with you, but I'm telling you.
What type of rice did you use?
Oh, I use basmati rice.
No, that's not jollof rice. What is that?
I use basmati rice.
You already
rice.
Lost
I use
it already. You lost it already. I was with you.
I like a longer grain rice.
No. We're not doing that. We're not going to do that.
Yes, we are.
No,
that's
we're
what
not
I do.
Gonna do that. So, you get the white. No, you need the white. I'm racist. The guy had the white royal. That thing got to be real, bro. No. And you got to get it from the international
white,
store.
It was white.
Got to get
basmati rice.
You got to get the big box from the international store, bro. You got to get the see, you know what? I failed you as a friend, and I will never do that again. Like when I cook it, you won't be here, and you gonna see what I'm talking about.
All right, let me know.
Well, they don't put enough oil in here.
No, I do now. Hey, no. Look, real talk. I put more oil in my, but I don't like too much oil. It don't taste good when it's too oily.
No, y'all both try to make a healthier version.
No, I went Ray. I ignored the healthy version because it doesn't taste the same. I've done it the correct way. I've decided not to go that route, and I've done it one way.
Of course, chicken stock.
You should use chicken broth, chicken stock, chicken broth. I use both. You should mix both of them, chicken and beef.
You do?
Yeah, mix both of them. Taste bomb.
I never thought of doing that.
And there's jollof seasoning too. I mean, I use that just for an extra kick. There's some jollof seasoning.
Oh, okay.
Actual jollof seasoning.
Like I said, it's not authentic. Wasn't terrible.
Look, man, you
was better. It was better than decent.
Okay, I respect that. I mean, it's better. I mean, look, you use basmati rice. You just combine Indian and Nigerian together, bro. West African. Let me not be disrespectful. West Africa. Like, I'm not going
Listen,
to
I used there. What was in my house and that I did not have to go out and spend more money on.
Respect.
Like he said, we going chopped on them. We playing that.
Yep.
Network game. Going to the pantry and make jollof rice.
Hey, Hey, you know, hey, man. Look, I'm glad that Will T has caught up with his roots. His roots.
He lost his card on that one.
Look. Behold, I mean, he's hey, Ray, he's trying. You know what I'm saying? All the like my roots jokes about it. He is now embodying the Kunta Kinte mentality. I respect this joint. This is my dude. This is my dude.
All right, Will, you got to wear some sandals next time.
Hey, I was in Annapolis, and I peeped the Africans. My girl was like, how you know he's African? Look at the sandals. Did you look? And they real. They the real ones. It ain't that BS stuff. It's the real, like, authentic, like, sandals. You know what I'm saying? Not that Payless crap. We talking about the Jordans, the sandals and crap.
Oh, yeah. Cue the Lion King music.
Can't you feel... Let's go ahead. Anyway, we're part of Empire Media. You can check us out at empiremedia.com. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kine Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kine, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
This show can also be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content.
Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
And last but not least, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. The NFL draft starts this week. The first round starts Thursday. We'll discuss who we think the Washington Commanders will draft. Finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with the voice of Morgan State, Lamont Germany, and Heritage Sports Radio Network's coach Jimmy Fly Hellman. They are the play-by-play basketball team for Morgan State. But first, round one of the NFL draft goes down Thursday. The Washington Commanders have the 11th pick overall. What should Washington do with that 11th pick, Ray?
So Washington, in my eyes, is still a defensive football team. And if Marty Herney is truly the VP of player personnel, he should construct a defense similar to how he did in Carolina. It doesn't have to be the same makeup, but still, I believe he needs to be the architect of the defense, a defense that's going to create turnovers and wreak havoc and help the offense. Because to me, this Washington football team is not going to be an offensive juggernaut. I don't care what they say about the current offensive coordinator. Shots fired. But anyway, with that being said, I just think if you're going to be a defensive football team, again, this is just my opinion, I would trade up a few spots and take Derek Stingley Jr. from LSU. He's falling because of injuries, and he's one of the top players, not just one of the top corners. He's probably the top corner, but he's one of the top players in this draft. You probably won't have to give up much in addition to the 11th pick, so that's what my move would be if I'm the Washington Commanders.
Will T.
I agree with Ray. You know, to this team's base, their strength is on defense. So, you know, and you have a stat front four, right? You drafted Jarman Davis in the first round last year. I think it's time to show that back four some love. And if he's available, I don't know if, you know, I haven't watched any mock drafts or anything like that, but the guy from Notre Dame, Kyle Hamilton, 6'4", it's almost like having a linebacker back there at safety. And we saw, you know, just what Landon Collins was able to do playing in the box with this defense. So if you bring another guy who has that size, athleticism, and who's a ball hawk and can make plays, I think Washington would be best suited by selecting that guy in the first round. But if he isn't available, I think you got to go for one of those top corners. The guy Derek Stingley, who Ray said, or the from LSU, or the young man from Cincinnati who I saw play.
Sauce Gardner.
I couldn't believe that was his first name, but yeah, Sauce Gardner.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards what you all are you're talking about. I mean, I think this team has already built their built themselves as a defensive squad. Ideally, personally thinking, I mean, for me, I have a vibe that they'll get Kyle Hamilton out of Notre Dame, the safety. I think that's a perfect, that's a good fit. Safety hasn't been the strongest play since 21 passed away. So I think that you get a guy that, you know, his 40 time wasn't the best, but if you look at what he did on Saturdays in terms of skill, he produced, and a lot of people high on him, you know, prior to like 40s and whatnot, they looked at him as a stud, as one of the best players in college, defensive players in college football. And, you know, you have an opportunity if he does drop to you to pick him up. I think that's a guy that is a perfect, is a good fit for this Washington Commanders team. But my whole thing is get the best player available. If you think that I've actually thought about it and thought hard about it, I know, like what Ray said, that, you know, offense isn't like defensive. This team is built defensively. But I'm like, now that I think about it, as it gets closer and closer, boy out of Alabama, Jamison Williams, I know he's coming off the ACL, but it's an ACL. If you can wait another year and get the real Jamison Williams in year two, I'll get him. Like, that's a dude that I think that could be a number one on any ball club down the road. And I know people are like, well, they need him now. Like, does it really matter? If you're looking at an organization trying to build an offensive team, you can't wait an extra year. It's not like this team's going to win Super Bowl next year. They're not that type of team. So why can't you draft a Jamison Williams if you think that in the long run he's going to be the best wide receiver in his class?
Okay, that's a fair point, Wale. Jamison Williams, before the injury in Alabama, he looked as if he would be a top 10 pick,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I think one thing you're failing to take into consideration is this team still needs to sign Terry McLaurin. So what are you going to pay Terry McLaurin $20 million? And then when you get, as Jamison Williams gets further along in his rookie contract, you know, if you aren't able to franchise him or sign him to a long-term deal, you're going to have to also be paying him another $10 to $15 million. So that's a lot of money to have tied up in that wide receiver, position.
It ain't going to hurt the Cincinnati Bengals. They didn't really need Jamar Chase. They got him. They didn't need him going into the draft. Everyone thought they should have went tackle. I'm just feeling like, to me, if he's the best player on the board and he's that kind of wide receiver, like you mentioned, before that injury, he was the best wide receiver in a deep wide receiver class. If he slips to you, you're getting an advantage in that situation. Like, you're getting an advantage in a point where this guy wasn't supposed to drop to you and you're going to get him. It's almost like, for instance, I'm not saying he is this individual, but we'll go years in our youth. When, because of, you know, a bad image, Randy Moss slipped to Minnesota. Did they need Randy Moss? They had Jake Reed and Chris Carter. No, because they knew they had the best player, or to them, the best player in the draft. You get an individual off an injury that could slip to you. I know, like, they talk about, you know, they got Curtis Samuel and this, that, and the other. Ron Rivera talking about he likes his weapons. You don't got a weapon like this if healthy. Like, and to pair that with Terry McLaurin, I think that's something you got to really think about hard and be like, you know what, maybe I should pull the trigger on this.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. When you think about, you know, and I sent you and Ray the article this afternoon about De'Ron Payne,
uh-huh.
Right? Who Washington is waiting until next year to sign, to possibly give a long-term contract. We don't know if they're going to be able to sign him or not. Right. And you think about how much money you have spent along that defensive line.
Yeah.
So what are you going to be? So you're going to pay your defensive lineman, your quarterback, and you'll have two wide receivers that are possibly being paid in excess of $15 million a year.
Your quarterback.
Where else are you going to be able to spread?
Your quarterback is only on for this year. The quarterback, if next season, you really don't have to. Depending on what you want to do.
No, he's guaranteed. His contract isn't guaranteed.
One year. So you don't really have that much money tied up. Just for this one season, you have it tied up into a Carson Wentz. So it's all predicated
on
what he does this year.
Hold on. But you're going to – okay, best case scenario. Carson Wentz has an above-average career.
Yeah.
Above-average year, right?
Yeah.
A year that's somewhat similar to the year when he – was
the Eagles
approaching the MVP, yes, when he guided the Eagles through the regular season and they ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Let's just for the purpose of this conversation, say he has that type of year, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a stretch.
Yeah, it's a stretch. That's all laughing.
Yeah, it's a stretch, but let's say he has that type of year, right? So what are you going to do? Are you going to go into these next 2 years with him, no guaranteed money, at $26 million? No, him and his agent are going to try to negotiate a longer-term contract, and it's going to be in excess of $26 million.
I think this team has already showed their hand in terms of what they value. You mentioned the article you sent about DeRon Payne. We can get into a little bit. But DeRon Payne, to me, you let Matt Ioannidis go. You let Tim Settle mm-hmm. go. So these guys are relatively cheaper. So you're already willing to kind of let people go anyway, and guys who you could afford. So I feel like right now, I think if they got a talented this regime within their guy, they pick their guy. If they pick Jamison Williams to say that's the pick for them, they already have a plan in terms of who they're willing to let go. I feel like, yeah, we can say they're tied into whatever because, I mean, the move makes no sense to say you're not going to try to re-sign or extend DeRon Payne when you let Matt Ioannidis go. You let Tim Settle go. You didn't even have to pay a bag for it. Like, that's not an expensive move. So this team is already letting you know that, in hindsight, like, they're not really – they already have an idea who they want to keep.
I think the history says draft a defensive player. Mm-hmm. The last two offensive studs – or dynamic offensive players that I can think of that Washington had with DeSean Jackson, who they didn't draft, of course, and Clinton Portis. Nobody they draft on the offensive side of the football becomes like this dynamic playmaker. But on defense, Champ Bailey, LeVar Arrington, Brian Arakpo, you can name Sean Taylor, you can name guys in the history that you draft on defense, and you got your value plus some. But offensively, they have swung and missed too many times. And I feel like you mentioned the best player. Last year, they didn't take Michael Parsons because they refused to move up, get him.
The best player.
I feel as though you learned from that mistake. But I hear what you're saying, too. The best player in the draft. I'm nervous that Jamison Williams, his talent will be wasted here, to be honest. Yeah. I'm scared that wouldn't work out because of the way the team is currently constructed. I feel like defense is a safer bet. Even though scared money don't make money.
Yes, I'm saying, like, my thing is, I know what you're saying, Ray. I feel you. Like, I feel that about certain quarterbacks, too, to come here, right? But, at the end of the day, it's like you gotta, if you're talking about an organization that you don't have, like we talk about not having enough talent, right, at certain positions or whatever, like true talent, like real talent. When you're at this point in the season, when you need, to me, we've already labeled multiple positions that this team, like offensive lineman, cornerback, wide receiver, some may say running back to a certain extent, not everybody, but some may say that because of the ball security situations. Safety. They need a lot. So if the player, to me, the best player is available, even quarterback for real. Real talk, we just trashed Carson Wentz on the low. Like quarterback too. If on your board, if the best, whoever the best player falls down to, it could be a defense and for all I care. The best player available on your board, you take. If that's Sauce Gardner, you take Sauce Gardner. Even though, again, you can make an argument that you got what's his name, Willie Jackson. You already got old boy from Minnesota in St. Juice. You like him, so that means your cornerbacks. You do like your starting cornerbacks for real. But all right, if Sauce Gardner is better than them, you get Sauce Gardner. You know what I'm saying? Like to me, or Stingley. You know what I'm saying? Like to me. Or and like safety Hamilton, like whoever your best, like whoever falls to you is the bet to you and on your board. If he's the best player and he's available, you take him. You're not good enough to say no. You're not good enough.
That's going to be Stingley most likely because again his draft stock dropped just because he's been injured. But if you look at his entire career, he's by far, in my opinion, the best corner. Sauce Gardner. Yeah. I'm not trying to disrespect him, and I know they drafted Derek Forrest last year, a teammate of his. So that may factor in as well. But I feel like Derek Stingley, as Ja'Marr Chase, put it that way.
Yeah.
Ja'Marr Chase was, of course, awesome in his rookie season.
Yeah.
They went head-to-head at LSU, just battling each other, preparing each other for games. I think that iron sharpens iron theme works for me in this case. But I'm not disagreeing with either one of you guys. But me and Will T on the same page in terms of building a defensive football team.
Uh-huh.
It just makes sense to me right now based on the decisions that have already been made and based on what their current roster looks like.
And George on Facebook, I mean, you feel free to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene, and comment on our Facebook page. This topic is on our Facebook page. George, he posted on Facebook, Kyle Hamilton or draft the stud wide receiver. Fish, he posted O-line or secondary. O-line is like interesting O-line. To me. I mean, I know it's needed, but I don't know. Go ahead, Will, what you wanted to say?
No, I was going to say O-line could be interesting. I think there's projected. I'm looking at a random mock draft right now, and it's projected that I'm looking at two different ones. Three or four offensive linemen can go in the top 10. With there being teams that possibly need a quarterback, i.e. Pittsburgh Steelers, i.e. the New Orleans Saints, you never know, somebody could try to trade into the top 10, and therefore a highly rated player drops to Washington. So let's for the sake of this conversation, say it is an offensive tackle. Wole, you say take the best player available. How do you feel about that?
If you're the best player, take him. That's all I'm like, okay. Fans got to stop having this, we got a draft, we think we have this position wrapped up. You don't. You won seven games, and you don't look good. Offensively, you don't look good, and defensively, you didn't look good last year. So what are you holding on to? Like, if you got the best player on your board, the best player available is a stud. I mean, supposed to be a stud. Your best player available, and he's top on your board, you take him. You don't have room. If Malik Willis is – you feel that highly about Malik Willis, you take Malik Willis at 11. If you feel that high about him, that highly about him. If you feel cool about picking at that particular position, you take him. You know what I mean? I don't care you hurting feelings, but you're not good enough. You're not like – that's the thing. You're not good enough to dispute that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you – are a certain level of a squad, then yeah, you got some leeway with it, but you're not that good. The Cowboys didn't get Ray mentioned Micah Parsons. To a lot of people, Micah Parsons wasn't their number one need. They needed a cornerback. They could have got Surtain. They didn't get Surtain. They got Parsons. You know what I'm saying? Like, get the best player.
And they did the same thing with CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah. Same thing with CeeDee Lamb. Exactly. We say, Will.
All right, well, let me ask you this question. With everything that's kind of going on around this team, you know, recently, you know, the D.C. and Virginia state's attorneys have come out and said they're going to investigate the allegations, the financial, you know, the allegations of not giving fans back their season, their deposits. Whenever, you know, tickets were canceled or I forgot the terminology of the exact reason. Do you think, is this, for you as a fan, is this draft, with all everything that you've heard come out over the past couple of months, is this draft kind of a reprieve for you for everything that's gone on?
You already know.
You could focus on not worry about the other stuff.
I never focus on other stuff because I'm all about sports. That's just me, though, personally. I'm different from everybody else. I'm just like all about sports. To me, what you do on the field. Now, obviously, this person is an issue with, you know, morale, right? Keep it a buck. But I only worry about what's on the field. Like, that's how I roll. But other fans, yeah, they into it. I get it. I understand. You know what I'm saying? Because I obviously, like, we talk about life. Happy home is a happy life, right? Same thing in the sports. In the sports realm, the ownership, you know what I'm saying? Like, in the sports realm, same thing applies. Like, everything trickles from the top to the bottom, right? So, you know, obviously, him being gone, the owner being gone, would probably make the whole environment better. But I only care about – I typically really care about, like, what's going to happen on the field with the draft, you know, what kind of player they get or whatever for that particular point. But that's like that. But that's really – that's temporary, though. You know what I'm saying, dude? Like, that's temporary. That's not even a long-term thing because everything has to – you have to have the – result on the field to show you whatever way this team goes. So for me, the draft is temporary, but that's for any football team. Like, the draft is like the start of football season, basically. When you get the draft, now everything's kind of clicking and rolling. And, you know, whoever this team gets, folks are going to feel some type of hope or some type of hype about it, right? When they got Jamin Davis, folks got hype. I got hype. And then obviously it turned out this way. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what the draft does for multiple NFL teams.
Well, it goes back to what you said about drafting the best player.
Yeah.
Look at the baseball team here in Washington. The Learners were criticized for how many years about being cheap. They weren't good owners. But when they drafted stars, Bryce Harper being probably the biggest name, Steven Strasburg, they produced on the field, and they ended up winning, and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
That's the same thing that can happen in Washington if they draft correctly. They bring in good players, excellent players, star players, people the fans want to watch, and people that produce, players that produce on the field, people will forget about Snyder in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, like, last year. I'm used to last year because I said this before. Rivera's drafts haven't been the best. And I think he even gave credit to there's a thing on Twitter. He gave credit to Kyle Smith, who was doing most of the drafting. And then, you know, when Rivera took over, you know, the draft hasn't been as successful. But to me, this is all, you know, this is a big thing for Coach Rivera. Like, he has to have a home run draft pick because – They decided to go all in on Carson Wentz, right? Real talk. Like, they decided to do it. Like, and now they don't have no money this season to kind of spend to get other free agents in here to help this ball club win games this season, right? Now they got to get bargain players. You know what I'm saying? So, he has to have a good draft. Like, he has to have a good draft. Because if he doesn't have a good draft, then you're looking at another subpar 7-9. Then folks won't blame the quarterback because they won't blame the OC, the offensive coordinator. They'll say the quarterback was some trash, and they won't look at the problem that's within. On Twitter, @BengalLamore, he tweeted, trade back with Green Bay for the 11th pick. Would you trade back? I wouldn't either. But I wouldn't.
No, so let me think about this. I would.
Okay.
For the simple fact that if you can get another first round pick, I know that Rivera's in year three of his, you know, of his program, so he's kind of in a win now situation. But if you can get an extra pick going forward, another first round pick going forward, and you have the slightest inkling that Rivera won't be here next year, then, you know, why not have two first round picks with a new GM possibly to, you know, kind of help reboot this team?
I mean, what about you, Ray? Would you trade back?
I don't think I'm trading back.
Yeah.
For the simple fact that, again, what we're talking about, I'm not sure I care about what the analysts say in terms of this being a deep draft or the most talented draft.
Yeah.
I know that there's not just this one star player. However, there's always gems in drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a good pick. Last year, what did we talk about? The pick they have is just not in a good, it's not a good spot.
Yeah.
But now they have a good spot. Just outside the top 10,
yeah,
you can get a top player, take the best player, just like Wole, you've been saying. I wouldn't trade back.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this is around the realm. I can't try to remember where the Cowboys got Micah Parsons. Like, it's around the same realm, right? Like, around. I don't think it's exactly the number, but around. I feel like it's an opportunity to get a stud. It is. Like, this team has been trying to, you know, get bargain players or players they felt like just it's a need. You know, a lot of players have been like, you can't arguably say some of these players have been the best players in the first round. They've been players of need, right? Like, this to me is a situation where you can draft the best available player. Not the player you think you fit you. Like, there's no competition in this position. There's competition in this position, so we can't draft him here because we already have this person allocated in this position. But this player that we have right here on the board is a dynamic player that can make special plays in that position. But we don't want to hurt that guy's feelings, so we're not going to draft him. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a situation to me where at 11, you can draft the best available player. I don't care if you got Curtis Samuel and you promised him to be the number two wide receiver. I don't care. If Jameson Williams is on the board or Drake London, you like Drake London. If you like Garrett Wilson, you like Chris Olave, if you like any of those players, and you think they're better than Curtis Samuel, I don't care. And you think they can make big-time plays and they could be potential number one caliber wide receivers, you better not be worried about hurting no Curtis Samuel's feelings. It don't matter. Like, this team has been so pedestrian at whatever they've done It's time to change up, because what you doing ain't working. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, real quick, before I let y'all, before we go into the break, what do you think the direction of the draft should they focus heavy on offense or heavy on defense, or do like an even blend?
I think the first pick should be defense, but there are clearly other holes along the offense that you need to fill. And or positions you need to upgrade along the offense, particularly the offensive line. I think you're okay at – I think you have some interesting pieces at tight end. Of course, you need another receiver. And you have two capable running backs in J.D. McKissic and Antonio Gibson. But it never hurts to have a third guy that, you know, just in case injuries happen. So I think you should – I think you need to, as you said, take the best talent. But you know, once you get into like those mid rounds of the draft, you need to start to identify guys who you can plug and play along the offensive line, and some more depth along the defensive line, because you let two guys who are key to your rotation go.
I'll pick it up from there, Will T, because I agree with your last point. As I said earlier, the focus should primarily be on defense. You need to increase team speed. You need to build depth, as Will T just said. You need to build along the defensive front with the changes that Wole, you mentioned earlier. No more Ioannidis, no more Settle, Deron Payne not being extended. And again, you need a defense that is going to be designed to create turnovers. That will help your offense no matter who's behind center or no matter who's lining up at running back or receiver. If you create a short field, that will aid whoever is on your offensive personnel. Now, there are some guys in this draft defensively who you can get later on. I like Neil Farrell out of LSU, defensive tackle. He looks as though he'll be a nice late round selection who you can plug in right away, who can be productive. There's also a ton of athletic linebackers. However, based on what I've seen, none of them are prepared to necessarily contribute right away, especially in pass coverage where Washington needs that help. But I still think you can build depth and you can start to develop young guys. So defensively is where I'm at. Guys, I told you, Wole, offensively, they could do more. They could be more creative with Antonio Gibson versus just having him as an every down back. And I feel like if you make him more like a hybrid weapon, I want to say Deebo Samuel. Deebo's on another level because of who he's playing for. And I hope he doesn't leave San Fran, because that could be a mistake for him. Anyway, that's another subject. But Antonio Gibson, as big as he is, as physical as he is, and as fast as he is, he's played receiver. He could be a dynamic weapon on offense if you use him correctly. I don't think you need to upgrade too much. Hopefully Curtis Samuel will be healthy. Offensive line, definitely I agree. Sam Howell might also be there in the second round. You can take him.
Yeah, definitely. Well, right, you can take us to break, right?
Yes.
Oh, my bad. All right. As part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with Morgan State University basketball play-by-play team, the voice of Morgan State, Lamont Jeremy, and Heritage Sports Radio Network's own coach, Jimmy Fly Helmet. You'll hear that after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces on Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com.
I thought you was going to say feel free.
Straight out of ATL. Got young one. Chopping that thing, baby. Swiss beats, full surface. Come on.
Tear up, let me see you tear. that money, then I'm kicking her out. I spit game to your wife, then we robbing your house. Not that way gripping the screen. If you got it and I want it, I ain't calling your name. Just lay it down, boy, like I'm balling. See, just get your chest to the lap.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole. And we are part of Amp Pyre Media at Amp. PyreMedia.com. All right, it's time for HBCU Corner. This segment spotlights coaches and players within HBCU athletics. Here is an interview with the voice of Morgan State University, Lamont Germany, and Heritage Sports Radio Network's coach Jimmy Fly Hellman. They are the play-by-play team for Morgan State basketball. We conducted this interview last week. Take a listen.
Welcome back to the Urban Sports Scene. As part of our HBCU Corner, we are now joined by two gentlemen who have decades worth of experience covering HBCU sports and athletics, with our first guest being known as, quote, the voice of Morgan State. He is Mr. Lamont Germany. And last but not least, we also have this brother who I get a chance to talk sports with here and there on the Roundball Report. He's also part of HSRN, Heritage Sports Radio Network. He is the coach, Jimmy Fly Hellman. Fellas, welcome to the Urban Sports Scene.
Hey, what's up? Appreciate the invitation, man. Glad to be on board.
No doubt.
Jimmy, how do you work with Ray? Like, how does that work? Like, you work with Ray? You work with Ray. Like, does he bother you? Does he annoy you? I mean, you.
Oh, no. Living... educate, bring him along to my way of thinking.
Yeah, we're not going to talk Wizards or none of that stuff. This is going to be a fun discussion. I love the sweater, Coach. You know, you dropped a couple pounds, looking good, man. Keep the sit ups and all that good stuff up. So, in my brief introduction, I only provided just a little detail about your experience and your accomplishment, guys. So, I would like to give you the opportunity to share with our listeners a bit more info just regarding your background and what you do. So, I guess we'll get started with you, Mr. Germany.
Yeah, fellas. First of all, just want to extend my appreciation for you guys inviting me. My career now has been made. I'm on the Urban Sports Scene. It took me a while to get to this level, but I worked hard. I kept at it, and I finally arrived. Mom, here I am on the Urban Sports Scene. So great. It's all good. I'm a proud graduate of Morgan State University. I came to Morgan from my hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That's where I am right now, visiting family. When I got to Morgan, they didn't have any radio. They didn't have any broadcasting going on. So I volunteered myself to go ahead and step in and fill that gap. All the other institutions in the Baltimore area, predominantly white institutions, they had a place in the media landscape, and Morgan was an orphan. There wasn't anything going on. So I decided to pick up a microphone and start running my mouth. And I started that way back in 1983, and I haven't shut up since. I've been doing Morgan football, Morgan basketball. When the volleyball team's playing, I'm on the mic. When the softball team is striking people out, I'm on the mic. So if it's about screaming about Morgan State in particular, HBCUs in general, I've been about that for basically the last four decades.
Amazing. Coach Fly, what do you want to share with the people?
Well, since I'm not an HBCU grad, I'm a graduate of the Geneva College Golden Tornadoes, Beaver Falls, PA, home of Joe Willie Namath. But anyways, we have that connection. LT and I, we're both Pittsburgh guys, grew up in that area. I guess I should say how I met him. I would, you know, when I was coaching in the Maryland JUCO, he was the PA announcer for CCBC Dundalk. So that's how we kind of started talking. And I remember just, you know, messing with him saying, when I found out he was on the radio, saying, you ought to put me on the radio someday. I think I'd be pretty good at that. You know, we banter back and forth, talk about the Steelers. And then when my coaching finished up, I got a text message from LG saying, you know, meet me at the Hill Field House. I'm putting you on the air tonight. You know, out of the blue, no warm-ups. Get in the seat, put the headset on, let's go. It just took off from there. I did the CIAA and the MEAC tournament back-to-back that year. It was like a basketball junkie addict because I just did game. Like, I must have did 30, 40 games in 2 weeks. And then he told me the seat's yours if you want it. So I've been there ever since.
Hey, guys, let me just add a little something to Coach's resume, just a quick addendum. Yes, as he said, he did not go to an HBCU, but he truly bleeds the colors. We were doing a tournament game, a MEAC tournament game. It was Howard against Morgan. Came down to the final seconds of the game. Howard beat Morgan with a buzzer beater. I turned to this guy. He had tears. I mean, real tears his eyes. That day when Morgan lost to Howard at the buzzer in the tournament, a team that may have gone on and won the tournament that year. So it's in his heart. He bleeds it. He breathes it. And he wears the colors not just for show. He wears the colors because he truly has become a Morgan Bear.
I had a young lady on that squad, Bianca Jarrett, that graduated from transferred from West Virginia, that could just flat out ball and drop. And that's when the Lady Pirates of Hampton were dominating, won like 50, 60 games in a row. And I did have a tear in my eye. That hurt me. I wanted her to win so bad. But LG had, he had two tears in his eyes because I looked over him. You know, it was just a boom, boom, shocking, missed shot, half second, throwing in, buzzer, you know, game over, you know, nothing to review. And, you know, it was just a buildup of emotion. It was like, wow. Because coaching, you're emotional. You know, you go home and you got this rerun in your head.
Don't you? Don't I know it?
Yeah, man. I can relate to some degree. But then again, I feel like just listening to you guys, again, thank you. And I appreciate just your level of commitment, your level of experience and what you're teaching me, because I'm not as passionate as of yet about my alma mater. You know what I'm saying? I was sitting there thinking that you were talking like, have I ever came close to crying about UMS losing a game?
Oh, no, probably not. No, I haven't.
You know what I mean? Now, when I play intramural hoops on campus, you know, it was some times where I was mad. But
We was passionate.
I do want to see my school, of course, go to the NCAA tournament in terms of basketball. And you all have achieved that feat at Morgan State. So I'm hating a little bit. But as again, this is all about HBCUs, of course, man. I got love for y'all. So in a few words, we'll start with you, Lamon. Describe your experience over these years just covering HBCU sports and what it means to you.
Well, it was a new experience for me. Coming from Pittsburgh, a place where there are no HBCUs anywhere in sight, my mother insisted that I go to an HBCU. So I just applied at a handful, and Morgan was the one that came in first. And relatively close, 4 or 5 hours away. And I did have a cousin who lives in Baltimore, still does. So I had some family down the way. But I stepped on foot. My first experience at Morgan was as a stranger. I didn't really know anybody. I'm probably a little shy and reserved by nature. And I think being on the radio helps me to hide my shyness, if you know what I mean. I kind of hide behind that veneer of the microphone. And when I saw that gap that I mentioned earlier, where there was no voice from Morgan State University, I just said, why not me? And so I jumped in the pond and kind of learned as I went along about what this HBCU thing is all about. And I learned day by day on campus and game by game going to other campuses about, first of all, the depth, the richness of the history. There are so many stories that are untold. There's a lot of stories that are told, but there are so many that are untold about the HBCU athletic experience. And don't get me started across the board when it comes to business and science and industry and religion and entertainment on HBCU campuses. But if we just want to confine ourselves to the athletic realm, that can fill up a library. I'm so proud of the history at Morgan State University, one of the more accomplished HBCUs athletically. Unfortunately, fellas, most of Morgan's accomplishments came pre-1980, before I got there. The 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s are filled with Hall of Famers, records, championships on the track, on the football field, baseball. Morgan had a great baseball team people don't know about in the 40s and 50s, a great women's basketball program back in the 70s. And then I came along and things didn't go as well for the orange and the blue starting in 1980. We had that oasis that you alluded to when Todd Bozeman came on the scene about 10, 15 years ago now on the basketball court. And for the first time, Morgan went to the Division I big dance. And there I was, man, rubbing shoulders with the big boys.
Yes, sir.
Not just once or twice, but I kind of got used to it. And I said, I could do this all the time. But if you've never experienced basketball on that level, that should be on everybody who's a hoop head. Got to be on your bucket list. It really is a great experience. And to see HBCUs not only go to those places, but to win. Mm. When Fang Mitchell went there and won in a number 15 seed, they beat a number 2 seed. When they pulled off the big upset over South Carolina back in the 90s. That was so exhilarating. For me as a Morgan guy, Morgan's across town from Howard, from Coppin. My first reaction was, okay, I'll admit it, a little jealousy. But just a little.
Hate a little bit.
Just a little bit. I'm human, but, why not us? But then it was love. Then I thought to myself, that is us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all part of this thing. We all share in that joy. And to see it happen again and again, Hampton did it, Norfolk State did it, able to pull off a big upset in the tournament. Yeah. And one of my biggest moments behind the microphone was when Morgan went to the University of Maryland campus. This is when Gary Williams was still the head coach at Maryland. And Morgan beat Maryland at
College Park.
There's never been a better feeling on the microphone for me in 40 years. I still remember that moment like it was yesterday when Morgan beat Maryland at Maryland. And boy, that was an unforgivable sin for Terp country. They wanted to hang Gary Williams upside down by his toenails, losing to Morgan State. So I could go on, but it's been a rich experience, a fulfilling experience, and the HBCU experience is something I wouldn't trade for anything in the world.
Coach Fly, you want to add anything just about what it means to you, man, be covering HBCUs as well? Sorry, man. Go ahead.
No, I when I was coaching in the JUCO and stopped coaching when I finished coaching up there, I guess it was about 2010, somewhere around in there. When Lamont brought me on the radio, I thought this was going to be the end for me basketball wise. I would just sit on the couch, and I was already announcing on the couch at home for years. So actually, when I put the headset, it wasn't difficult for me. But I just like to add the level of talent and professionalism of Lamont. A lot of people might not know who he is. On a broader scale, nationally, but this man has talent. I've listened to a lot of broadcasters. This guy could easily be on ESPN, on NBA broadcast, doing anything, football or basketball wise. He kind of brought me along, taught me the radio business, how this thing works. And it was just a natural fit. I understood how, once I started doing games with him, he talks real fast. I talk a little bit slower, but I learned how to, he taught me how to get in and out, get, condense what I got to say, and because basketball is fast, and football, you know, you got a minute, you know, 2 minutes maybe between plays, you can talk. Basketball, you got to get in, get out, make your point, and move on. But him and I have a very good chemistry, I think, you know, on the mic together. And so I appreciate him extending my career in the basketball world.
Mm. So Coach Jimmy, I mean, I coach basketball. You know, I've been coaching like for 10 plus years. I see that you're a coach, and I've seen a lot of your stuff on Round Ball Report on YouTube and whatnot. And no, don't do that. Don't do that, right? And I dig your basketball mind. I can tell that you know your X's and O's like to a different level. So for me, you know, viewing coaches and whatnot, coaching. I mean, obviously doing games at HBCU. Who are some of the best coaches that you've seen as HBCU coaches?
Well, I watched two of them up close and personal, Coach mm-hmm. Bowden, and I came right after they won a couple MEAC titles. I've done three championship games with Lamont where they unfortunately lost to A&T, Central, and then Norfolk State 2 years ago. But Coach Bozeman, definitely. And then Coach Brodus, I like a whole lot. I think he's going to, you know, he's had success there, but I think he's going to get over the hump and get them back into March Madness. But Fang Mitchell was still there at Colorado State, you know, which I always respected him. And the women's coach who at Coppin, who was his assistant coach when he started in the JUCO in New Jersey, I think at Gloucester before he came to Coppin, he became the head coach of the women. These guys have basketball minds when you talk to them, watch them. Fang Mitchell hadn't lost anything when they got rid of him. He still was coaching. I'm watching these guys on the sidelines. You got to go down to North Carolina Central, Coach Moten, mm-hmm. who consistent winner down there. And the guy from Norfolk State and Hampton before they left. I mean, there's a lot of good coaches in mm-hmm. there. And my thing is always, as I will always say, some of these guys, like Coach Moten down in Central, he could coach in the ACC, give him the same type of players, and he's successful, you know. But some of these guys, unfortunately, won't, you know, get the shot to the bigger level because for whatever reasons, these bigger conferences won't promote a coach that's at a MEAC or SWAC school. That's just the way it is.
So Coach, when you're doing a game, like when you're doing a game and you're watching, you know, I mean, having a basketball mind, having an elite basketball mind, to be honest with you, what are you looking for? Like, what are you trying to look at? What keys are you looking for?
Well, Lamont and I, we don't have the benefit of having producers and giving us all the data. We got to do that homework ahead of time. And Lamont, you know, breaks everything down in sheets. So but I do my own homework. But I'm looking at, you know, the last five or six games. I might watch some tape, each team, what kind of defenses they're playing, their style. But for doing it for so long, I pretty much know the teams now in those conferences when they're playing other opponents. But I always look for styles. I look for how they score, how they defend, because you can kind of figure out how this game is going to go. And that's before the game, I always say, Coach Jimmy Fly, break it down. What's he doing in this game?
Let me just add one other element to Coach's preparation that he left out. Because it isn't always just the X's and O's and the stats and the wins and the losses. But Coach does an extremely good job of getting to know the individual players on the team. He reaches out and touches the players personally. I seen before games teaching players how to shoot free throws. I mean, he's literally at the free throw line. Now, this is where you stand, and this is how you hold the ball, and this is your release point, and this is where you're aiming, and this is how you got to just shoot 85% from the free throw line if you do what I'm telling you. I'm saying, Coach, they ain't paying you to do that. Come back over here and sit with me.
Look, Coach, you ain't teaching them to step back? You're not teaching them to step back or the Dirk one-legger? You ain't teaching them to
like 2 minutes. I got to get in and get out before somebody sees me and tells me to get out of the building.
But that's right, guys, the other element that's important is the personal element, because these are people, and we like to relay those personal stories when we broadcast as well.
Obviously.
So, obviously, we've already kind of alluded to it with all the increased exposure and its growing attention on HBCU athletics, which includes, of course, your Morgan State Bears. They took part in NBA All-Star Weekend. I just want to get your feel. Where do you think HBCU sports are headed? And in your opinion, also, what's the future of the MEAC?
Well, I love all the attention that HBCU athletics and HBCUs more broadly have been getting. My only reservation is it a flavor of the month situation? Are we going to be, you know, here today, embrace today, and then kick to the curb tomorrow? Because this is a long-term thing. This isn't something that is going to be able to be fully embraced in a week, a month, a year. So I want to see where all these different entities who have been embracing HBCUs, where are they 6 months from now? Where are they a year from now? Where are they 5 years from now? Are they still in it when the lights are out and there's no longer the same kind of focus? That's my only reservation about it. But Ray, to answer your question, NBA All-Star Weekend, I think that was a fantastic platform for Morgan and Howard. I think it was a great idea conceptually. What the NBA did, just for those who may not be aware, Morgan and Howard were a part of the All-Star Weekend. And this year, the All-Star game was in Cleveland, Ohio, played as it always is on that Sunday. But the day before, on Saturday, it was Morgan playing Howard. And I can't tell you what it meant for the players on Morgan and Howard's team to be playing a game where you sit and you look and there's LeBron watching you. And Steph is watching you, and they're seeing their heroes, and now they're performing before them. It's if you're a singer and Stevie Wonder is watching, you're performing on a stage.
You should watch. Don't do that.
Listen to me. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Don't do that.
He's watching for the
kids. Yeah, I get you.
but admit something. To the Howards and the Morgans. And again, this is something I hope is still here a year from now, 5 years from now.
I just want to say real quick, that's what this is about. It's about people knowing the history. And I want to quickly show Coach Broder some love, because when he came on with us, he pointed out how when he was in school and he went to Bowie State, he said, you can go to FAMU. And there was as many NFL players on that campus that's on the campus of Alabama and Oklahoma. Because back then, it was the norm for players from HBCUs to go to make it to the pro level. And I don't think people know that. Kind of what you're saying is that, Wole, you started nodding immediately, because we know some people are just jumping on the bandwagon.
They're trendy.
Because
they're
it's
real
a
trendy.
Hot topic.
Yeah.
Right. And that, like you kind of alluded to, can fade eventually, because the news cycle changes all the time. So that's what we're doing here, to keep it going, to keep this movement alive, and also to teach people the history, because I always recommend that people go back and watch Black Magic, the ESPN documentary. I don't know if you saw that, but it was amazing, man. And just educational. So I'm not going to say too much more than that. But Wole, I don't know if you want to go to the next question or not.
No, I want to ask, I kind of want to piggyback on what you were talking about. I was going to ask the question is, like, so how can we make this a long-term thing? Like Ray and I, our idea is like to kind of like be a part of the cog and, you know, obviously have segments like this. But for you and in your opinion, how can we make this a long-term thing rather than this fear of being a trendy thing?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that will be important to keep this train moving down the track and ensure that this isn't something that a year from now we're talking about from a historical perspective rather than a here and now perspective. When opportunities present themselves, such as it did with Morgan and Howard this past weekend, it's about putting your best foot forward. And I think that's what happened with Morgan and Howard. They put a great product. It was a great game. It showed off the individual skill set of the players on the two teams, but also showed off HBCU flavor, because it's a whole different vibe, that HBCU vibe. You know it, UMBS. It's different. Morgan's about 5 minutes from Loyola and about maybe 10 minutes from Towson. If you step on Towson's campus on a game day or Loyola's campus on a game day in Morgan's, it's no question which one is the HBCU. The moment you set your foot in the gym or in the football stadium. And that vibe being shared on that level, in this case, the HBCU All-Star Weekend NBA level, is something that Morgan and Howard did. And I think that will help to make sure that next year they do it again, 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 and we start to build on it. And then the second component is we can't be afraid to speak up. It's not like, and I think Chris Paul put it the best way. It's not like the NBA is doing HBCUs a favor. He said, you deserve to be here. You deserve to be on this platform. The talent you bring, the history you bring, the intensity you bring, the entertainment value you bring, you should be here. You belong here. So it's not like you're indebted to us. No, we're indebted to you. And so we can't be ashamed to step up, speak up, to make sure that this thing continues and doesn't become flavor of the month.
Well, I'd like to add one thing to what Lamar says, because I agree with everything he said there. Just let me throw in the atmosphere, because I love the Morgan State band. He knows. When there's nobody in the gym, I'm like, we need to pump in band music to these games. But it just brings another dimension to the atmosphere on campus in the Hill Fieldhouse. But this is something I talked with Lamont several years ago, and we've had these conversations. To me, there's another component. And I asked him about this, whether these conversations taking place, and these got to be taking place at the top level with the presidents of the college and the people running these institutions. The MEAC is down to 8 teams. When I joined Lamont, they were at 13 teams. So they've lost 5 schools. Florida A&M, Bethune-Cookman went back to SWAC. Savannah State went to Division II. Hampton, A&T, you know, left the building for bigger conferences. Mm-hmm. But they only have 6 football teams left. 8 schools, UMES and Coppin State, don't play football.
Yeah.
They are at a crossroads to me that nobody is mentioning, that if one more school with a football team drops out, they're going to be in big trouble. My thing was that I talked to Lamont years ago was that why is there not a conversation here about WAC and the MEAC joining forces? Just look at the Big Ten. They got, you know, 12, 14 teams. ACC got like 16 teams. But now you can create a TV market, even though it's going to be south and northeast. Mm-hmm. But the power of having all those schools in one conference, all right, and a Grambling coming up to play, you know, Howard or Morgan State, you know, Southern, vice versa. If you create that, you can create a TV package that will give them the dollars, because to sustain this and grow it even bigger, you need money to do that. To me, that's a no-brainer. I don't know, like, Lamont would know more whether those discussions have been had or not. But to me, you have to have a vision if you're at these schools. Because say Norfolk State bolts and leaves the MEAC. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not going to have any CIAA teams going to step in, go up to Division I. Costs too much money, and you already have a plan in place to do that. So now you'd have to bring in outside teams that are not HBCU. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that should be priority number one. And then the second thing I would say, the Chris Pauls of the world and LeBron James and these guys that are stepping up and giving exposure to this. I know Stephon Curry gave $1 million, I believe, to Howard.
$2 million to the golf program. Yeah.
Golf program, yeah.
But these guys are multi-millionaires, all right? It would be nothing for them to each say, hey, we'll get like 30 of us. We're going to give $1 million each to schools to help fund you know, their athletic programs. But again, these are things, you know, you got to have a vision for this. You got to get these people in the room and say, we appreciate everything you're doing, you know, but we need cash is king. So I'd like to hear what Lamar thinks of my thoughts.
I'm on board with everything you said, Coach. I want that day to come where I see an HBCU do with St. Peter's, the mid-major school in Jersey City. Yeah. New Jersey did this year, made a deep run in the tournament.
Yes, sir.
And I think there's absolutely no reason why that can't be an HBCU. I'm going to go further than that, not just an HBCU, but multiple HBCUs.
I love
in
it.
In the top 20, in the top 25, in the Sweet 16. I think that that is a vision that doesn't have to remain just a pipe dream, but it's going to take what Coach talked about. You have to have those foundational things, and they begin with support and resources in order to first build it and then sustain it. And as it regards to MEAC, yeah, they're on the precipice. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. They have to find membership or they got to find a partner. And no better partner than the SWAC. And if the SWAC and the MEAC aren't having those conversations, they should. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, the MEAC has to have their doors open to new members coming on board. It might just be you and me, man, the way it's looking, Morgan and UMES. That might be it. That might be the MEAC, the way it's going. We may play each other 10 times.
All right. We're going to be there in person then. The four
of us I do have a follow-up question because, that's a good point that Coach Jimmy made. But does football hurt that, though? Because, you know, the SWAC has such a good football conference in terms of notoriety compared to the MEAC. You know, it's wild, but because South Carolina State in the MEAC, when it has the Celebration Bowl, I think the MEAC has won that, have the Celebration Bowl like about five years in a row or something like that. But in terms of like the image of the SWAC, like their football programs are more popular. So does that hinder it?
Yeah, you're right. The SWAC has done a better job at marketing.
Yes, definitely.
The MEAC has done a better job at playing football.
Yes.
When they actually play the SWAC,
they beat the SWAC. Yeah,
time and time again. Mm-hmm. Not just this year with South Carolina State and Jackson State, but the MEAC has owned the Celebration.
Yes, they've owned it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ever since it was birthed. And the same with, they have a game at the beginning of the year, the MEAC SWAC Challenge. It kicked off the season. Mm-hmm. And the MEAC has had its way in that as well. But you're right. The MEAC has to pick up its marketing mojo. Mm-hmm. If you're winning on the field, why should you be the lesser conference when it comes to visibility if you're beating that conference year in and year out? And that says that the SWAC has embraced the importance of marketing in a way that the MEAC needs to learn and step up their game.
Coach Jimmy.
No, I just want to say, because when you go, like when I went to the CIAA for my first time years ago, it was down in Charlotte. Now, I'd never been to the CIAA. I know who Bowie State is and a couple of the schools, but I didn't know the history of it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, doing my research and find out this is the most profitable tournament outside the ACC.
It is.
Tournament that there is. You know, but it goes back to, that was like a fraternity. That was like a family reunion when you went down there, because you have generational people. You got grandfathers and their children went, and now their grandchildren are attending these universities. That's why I say if the SWAC and the MEAC joined forces, it should be a marketing bonanza for Bank America or whoever, because you have generations of family units that have gone to these institutions, and now these kids that are going to graduate as engineers and doctors, whatever they're going to be in life, they're going to buy houses, they're going to buy cars, they're going to be consumers, which is what drives marketing. So these people would have access, you know, to that conference if you join forces. That's got to be, you know, a $1 billion proposition for, you know, companies that are selling stuff. So to me, you get a TV deal and blow this up, then you're creating new rivalries with these schools that, you know, play each other occasionally, but now, you know, compete against each other on a regular basis. And then I just add, when you get guys like Deion Sanders coming in as a head coach and this kind of thing, let's not forget the NIL. Because NIL is a big thing now. Because a kid can go to an HBCU that's got NIL money coming in. He doesn't have to try to jump to the NBA that quick if he's not ready, you know, because he's already getting paid. So I think there's ways, recruiting wise and that type of thing, that you can get top tier talent. But to me, what I want to see is a joining a marriage of the SWAC and the MEAC, and then get money behind it, because I think that in a 10-year time, that thing will go to where you're all talking about. You want to see it go.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, you gave me my next idea for a show in the future. Had a MEAC commissioner on here with me, and with us, I should say, because these are questions I would love to ask. But for the sake of time, I want to condense my last two questions, because it's been some big names, especially Lamont. I know you've seen it. Vashante Shanko, you, I'm sure you covered him. Butch Beard, some big names that have come through Morgan State. What are some players and or coaches that just stand out when you think of all your years of covering, you know, Morgan State athletics? What guys can you highlight that just automatically come to your mind that still resonate with you to this day?
I probably would spotlight a couple of individuals who don't get spotlight. If I could, I'm going to step off the football field. I'm going to take it outside of the basketball arena. I'm going to talk about a softball player, if that's okay.
That's great.
We do have HBCU softball. As a matter of fact, softball season as we speak. And that's a sport that's now emerging a little bit more nationally, getting a little bit more attention bit by bit. Morgan had a softball player about 15 years ago from California, Sacramento, California, named Tanisha Kemp. And if you know anything about softball, outside of the pitcher, the shortstop gets all the action on the field. And if you don't have a good shortstop, you're not going to have a good team. This young lady could cover anything that was hit in the infield, did not get through her, had a rocket right arm, and then when she picked up the wood, the balls would be flying all over Morgan State's campus. There are still broken windows on campus that this young lady broke with the home runs she was hitting. And I bring her up because a lot of times we just kind of default to basketball and football. And no hate.
No.
Scream and holler about football and basketball myself over the last four decades. But HBCUs have produced athletes in other sports that can play with people on any level. And the young lady that I'm talking about can play the game on the Olympic level, on the international level, and could have played at any prominent, predominantly white institution, but chose to come to Morgan State University, help elevate the softball program that just won its first championship just this past season. She long since graduated, but she helped steady the ship, give Morgan a little bit of attention. And she's one of the better just athletes in any sport that I've ever seen since I've been at Morgan State University, is Tanisha Kemp, who was a softball athlete. And I mention her because, again, that's a sport that doesn't get a lot of attention, and she's an individual that doesn't get a lot of attention.
Ole, I know you're gonna look her up, right?
Oh, you know I am. That's all. You know I am. You know I'm kind of working on it already. You already know,
Coach Fly. Anybody stand out for you over the years, man? Coaches, players. As he just mentioned, don't have to be anybody that's well known.
Well, no, the two guys most recent, I'll say basketball wise, because that's more my lane. Mm-hmm. Troy Baxter, who just graduated the previous year, got caught on, I think he's with Chicago in the G League. But I remember the first time, Lamont, I'll tell you, the first time I saw him, you know, in a practice or in a game, and he came from UNLV via Florida Gulf Coast. 6'9", dude, he had NBA hops. I mean, when I say, yeah, I'm talking the top level. This dude, I don't know if they measured him, he had to have at least a 36, if not a 40-inch vertical. That I'm not exaggerating. Lamont will tell you, this guy, his dunks were so ferocious. The first time I seen him dunk, I said to Lamont, I said, this guy could win an NBA dunk contest. I didn't play in the NBA. I just said, if he was in a dunk contest, he could win. Well, he won the college dunk contest in the Final Four his senior year from Morgan State. But he did catch on with the G League. You know, he needed to work on his defense, and his three-point shooting got better. But just pure athleticism, you don't see guys like that coming through the MEAC. And the other guy was Taiwan Kenley, LG.
Blue City Go-Go.
I mean, yeah, he made it with the Go-Go's. I think he went to the Lakers G League team this past year. I don't know if he stuck. But he was in the bucket. I mean, he was getting double-teamed every game. But this guy just had a capacity to split double teams and just wreck havoc on teams. And, you know, 30 points. You could just punch it in. Yeah, I know you're a little PG County guy.
he went to Roosevelt. I
just Roosevelt.
In there, man. Yeah, but
my
but
school.
He could score the basketball with the best of them. And to get to the next level, to get to the NBA level at this point in time, you're not getting there just playing defense. You better be able to score.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Guys, listen, we, of course, could go on all day. I would love to hear more of you guys' stories and just, you know, just get more of your wisdom. But, of course, for the sake of time, like I said, we're going to get ready to wrap up. Is there anything you all want to add? And, you know, like I mentioned, man, we got to do this again. But before I let you go, anything else you want to add? I don't see either one of you guys on social media, so I don't think I need to ask. Do we need to follow you? Nothing like that. But still, just share with our listeners just any more info about yourselves or, you know, what you got going on that you would like for folks to know.
Well, actually, I am on Twitter. I think I've sent like two tweets in my life. I'm working on the third now. So if anybody wants me to read my two tweets, it's Radio G-E-E is my handle. On Twitter. I've been told I need to pick up my game and maybe hang around with you fellas.
Yes, you can. Hang with us anytime. We'll show you about the tweet game. We'll show you the tweet game.
Ray don't
got the tweet game. You can hang with me.
Okay. He'll help you. I'm going to look you up now, though.
I need some help, though, fellas, in that area. And Ray, you'll see that when you look me up, that I need some assistance. So if you guys can help me with that, I'd appreciate it.
Definitely.
But I'd encourage you guys to keep doing what you're doing. This is really crucial to have folks who love HBCUs embrace HBCUs. When we show appreciation for each other, that helps to elevate everybody in the HBCU landscape. And I'll end where I began. If there's anything else moving forward that I can do, any way that I can contribute to what you guys are doing, just reach out and touch. And Lamont Germany will be there. Thank you guys for having me on. There
nice
I go.
Nice picture, man.
Yeah, that's me. How many tweets do I have, man, by the way? Does it say?
Let's see. I'm not that savvy. It
should tell you.
You have not tweeted since 2021, though, so that'll tell you something.
So that's a year.
That's not as bad as I thought it would be. I thought it would be like 2017.
Oh, you have 160 total tweets, so it's a little more than
three. Okay.
That's not bad.
All right. But I still need your help, man.
I'm here for you.
I got zero tweets.
Maybe I can work with you too.
No. We don't want to do that. We're not gonna go there. We're trying to wrap up, man.
Go to Round Ball Report, Urban, HSRN. The people listening, if they love HBCUs, you gotta turn it. You gotta download the HSRN app. You can listen to, you know, games across the country, football, basketball. Put it on your thing to do list.
All right, cool. I downloaded. I used to keep it during basketball season so I can listen to you, and then for space reasons, I deleted it. I got to bring it back. You know, but I do love HSRN. Of course, you're not the only person I know that's been down with HSRN, so that's sweet. But guys, again, thank you, Real Talk, for joining us. I appreciate the knowledge. Like I said, I'm sure you got more to offer, and we'll do this again. But thanks again.
Pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you, partner.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Man, wasn't that dope? It was amazing. You had the Morgan State University play-by-play team, for the basketball team. Lamont Jeremy, he is the voice of Morgan State, and Coach Jimmy Fly Hellman. Hey, dope show. Actually, I want to read a post that we just got from off Facebook for about our Washington Commanders, segment. We talked about what should Washington do with the 11th pick overall. The homie M. Sean Wilcox said Malik Willis. He wants Washington to take Malik Willis. Hey, if they feel like Malik Willis is the best player on the board, got to get him. Hey, man, again, thanks for everybody tuning in. You don't forget to also check out, all of our HBCU Corner segments on YouTube. They're on our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. So make sure you check out our interviews if you want to see the video format of HBCU Corner, man. We jump in. And if you got a homie, you got a coach, you got content creators from HBCUs, a HBCU player who's just trying to be put on, who wants to be interviewed by the Urban Sports Scene, jump on, man. We're here for you. We're here to promote HBCUs. I don't care. You play basketball, tennis, golf, volleyball, bowling. We out here. We out here to promote you. So just know we out here for you. We believe in all of our HBCUs. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes. Tune in iHeartRadio and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene. On IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. The YouTube channel I just mentioned, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're trying to grow up, man. We're trying to grow. We're trying to blow up from the flow up, All right, check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Ampire Media, at amppiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Ampire shows, as well as other great content. Okay, again, thank you all for tuning into the Urban Sports, and we appreciate it. All right, how does it go? Okay, I know. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Saint for ages. Yiddig deuces. Hey, Mega, do me a favor, bro. Do this out, big homie.